Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Loneliness has followed me my whole life. Everywhere. Bars and cars. Sidewalks, stores, everywhere. There's no escape. I'm God's lonely man.
Recognize God's only man, lonely man. Robert De Niro as Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver, your classic example of urban alienation in New York City. But is urban loneliness just a myth? In this city where one out of every two apartments is occupied by just one person, you'd think we might be a city of loners. But according to one school of thought, it's not about whether we live alone, it's about whether we feel alone. And it turns out, we generally don't. Joining us now, Jennifer Senior, contributing editor for New York Magazine, who just wrote an article on the myth of loneliness, and John Cassioppo, director of the Center for Cognitive and Social Neuroscience at the University of Chicago, and co-author of Loneliness, Human Nature and the Need for Social Connection. Welcome to WNYC, John, and welcome back, Jennifer. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
Jennifer, tell me how we can be the city with the most people living alone and yet we're not lonely.
Oh, gosh, I said that in like 5,000 words in that story. I think, the condensed version would be something like this. We have a lot of friends here, more than we would if we were in a smaller population center, and that's true generally of urban environments. That's one reason. Number two is something that you actually said, which is that it's not actually a question of whether you live alone. It's a question of whether you feel alone. And it turns out that people in urban centers, just as a general rule, don't feel as alone, whether it's because they have a wider variety of connections that are both strong and weak, or whether it's because, simply the fact that, public culture in New York is so warm right now after crime has gone down that, the simple act of walking down the street is no longer, horrifying the way that Travis Bickle experienced it, but kind of, enveloping. I mean, there are lots of reasons, and I'm sure John can elaborate too.
And listeners, we've got about 10 minutes for this segment. We'll take some of your phone calls if you get in right away at 212-433-4333. WNYC. Have you lived in other cities or maybe in small towns or rural areas? If so, tell us how New York City or New York City and vicinity compares in terms of your social interactions. Have you found it easier or harder to actually feel lonely here than in some other environment in which you've lived? John Cassioppo, you disagree with one of our occasional guests here, Robert Putnam, who wrote the famous book Bowling Alone about the death of community participation. And while that still might be true that we don't participate in traditional ways like unions or the Elks or bowling leagues, you disagree with him that this means the death of community. Talk about that.
Well, one of the things we've learned is that loneliness is a signal to change your behavior to avoid an adverse outcome, very much like hunger, thirst, and pain. And the signal is to reconnect because we're biologically wired to connect with other individuals. If you look at the average interaction people have, it's a pleasant interaction, not an adverse interaction. So we're prepared to interact in a positive fashion with other individuals. That doesn't mean that all interactions are going to be positive. And it doesn't mean that what Robert Putnam talked about isn't occurring. There are demographic changes that are making individuals, on average across America, more isolated in their lives. It means that that isolation need not be associated with loneliness. And New York City is a good example. Over time, whereas many places in rural settings, for instance, we've seen increased isolation and increased loneliness with the increased exposure and contact among people, less crime, less concern about crime, more young people with families moving into New York, more time spent outside together with kids. All of that leads to more social contact with less fear and threat, which, of course, produces better connections, both weak and strong, as Jen mentioned.
Blair in Woodstock, you're on WNYC. Hi, Blair.
Hi. I actually moved to Woodstock, which is a small town in the Catskills, because I found living in Brooklyn to be really lonely as a single person. It's a bizarre move, if you think about it, in terms of what he's saying, but it actually really worked for me.
Why do you think it worked?
Because I'm able to access a different type of community there that I didn't find in Brooklyn. People that I am friendly with, I'm single, they became engaged in family life, and I found it really lonely to be living in my box, which was my apartment next to other people in their boxes, and not know them and not really feel that there was room to make a connection.
So you're living in a smaller town, but as a single?
Yes.
And you feel more connection?
I actually do, and also I find nature to be very, I mean, I'd rather be alone in nature with space rather than cramped next to other people and feel that I'm not connecting with them.
Blair, thank you. And John, you write about nature in this aspect in your book, don't you?
Yes, and Agnes Carter, her comments are really quite representative in that it's really people's ability to connect, and that ability to connect isn't defined by a particular social environment, not by a city, not by a rural environment. It's how that person fits into that particular environment. And, you know, fortunately, we vary a lot across individuals, and so certain settings fit a particular individual style better, and that's why, you know, it's really about finding connection in other individuals around you, regardless of your social environment. That's the key to, if you will, being much happier in your life, and in fact, healthier across your lifespan.
Albert in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Albert.
Good morning. More chicken soup.
Yeah, really.
You feel better.
Thank you.
I'm a native New Yorker. I've lived in San Francisco three separate times. I've lived in Washington, D.C. for the last 10 years. I've lived in Paris half the year in Manhattan. There are two big benefits to living in such a large urban area for me. One is that I can remain anonymous, whereas in a small town, everybody knows who's coming to my house, who's staying over, who's what I'm doing, what I'm wearing. And I love being anonymous. Secondly, I can just be very alone in my apartment, but if I want to engage, I can walk in the park, go to a museum, and it's like 5, 10, 15 minutes away. Mm-hmm. I love the anonymity factor that we can just sort of, you know, we can be downtown, uptown, crosstown, and no one is defining who we are or how we're living our lives.
But if you talk to people in the park or the museum, then they think you're a weirdo, right?
Oh, I don't talk to them. Oh, not at all.
Then you're not really with them.
No, I am with them. They're part of the humanity. But I come back to my apartment to be alone with myself and read and music. But I have the opportunity to do that without a car, and you can do it in 5-10 minutes.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
I was going to respond to it. There were two aspects of that. The first is that I make the analogy in my story that, you know, New York is a little bit like the internet. It's this giant kind of, you know, it's this boundless milieu of connections and connectedness, but at the same time, there's something anonymous and atomized about it. And in the same way that somebody can kind of sit, you know, at their computer terminal and be alone in their little silo working, you know, like sort of typing into a screen, they can meet somebody online and then they can go and have coffee with them. There's kind of this porous sense that you're either behind the screen or you can then come and, you know, join people that you meet online, which is in fact the way that internet interactions work. It's not like it's really a separate milieu, you know, being online and being off. They kind of mix. And New York is the same way. He's describing something very similar, which is, you know, you can go out and you can circulate, or you can retreat back into your room. It's really the same kind of movement.
We're almost out of time. Jennifer and John, just weigh in real briefly on this. Half the population of the world lives in cities now, and by 2050, they say 70% will. Do you think this myth of urban alienation, Jennifer, is true for most urban areas, or is there something unique about New York?
No, I think it's a myth. I think it's exactly that. And actually, in cities around the world, I think it's an even, you know, I think they're even less lonely in the sense that extended families all live under, you know, one roof. I mean, you know, I think that in places, New York is unusual in that every other apartment in Manhattan, you know, has just one person living in it. And in the city as a whole, one in every three. But, you know, in cities around the world, I mean, good God, you've got, you know, 10 people living in one room.
And from our comments page, someone writes, hey, a shout out to those who live with someone and are still lonely. John, 20 seconds, last word.
Yes, I think New York and other cities are very much like the net, as Jen suggested. But the net can make you lonelier or less lonely. It depends how you use it. I think New York and cities are that way. You have the opportunity for high-quality exposure to others. You can retreat from them, and sometimes that's healthy to get away and collect yourself as well. But you can also become isolated in a city. And so it's very much like the net. It gives you more possibilities.
Right.
Fortunately, we're seeing an improvement.
John Cacioppo has written Loneliness, Human Nature, and the Need for Social Connection. Jennifer Senior in New York Magazine this week on the myth of urban loneliness. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
People are everywhere. The sound of laughter and music.